Good morning, everybody. Good morning. My name's Tim Porter. I'm one of the pastors here at Faith Community. Thank you for being here on this wonderfully warm and balmy day inside. So thanks for being here. Again, my name's Tim Porter, and we invest some of our time here as a worship gathering into learning from the scriptures together. And so if there's anything that I say during this teaching time that you have questions about, come on up after the service. I'll be up here on the floor and love to talk with you. I'm not going to hug you. I'm not going to shake your hands because I'm just getting over some stuff, so you're probably going to hear it in my throat a little bit here as well. But I'll try to stay a good arm's distance away, and we're gonna see how the sound guy does with periodic coughs and see if he can mute them on time. So it'll be a little bit of a game here today to see how that goes, right? All right. In 1999, I had the privilege of going on a fishing expedition with my father-in-law and brother-in-law, and father-in-law's good friend from college and his two sons up to Seward, Alaska. We were up there. We were fishing for 8 days, fishing for halibut and salmon and ling cod and all kinds of fun fish together. And we were on what's called a six-pack boat. That's not because you bring six packs on it. It's because it's just big enough for six fisher people and a captain. And so that was the boat that we were on for probably about a good 8 hours a day for 8 days in a row. It was a glorious, glorious time. And there was one day, though, that we were out fishing and a storm started to roll in. And I'd never been in a storm on the ocean before. We were about a mile out from port, but we could still see some big rock islands by us and that kind of stuff. So we were never like fully in massive danger. But eventually, the wind got so strong and the waves got so big that the captain said, "Hey, we're heading in to port." And he called everybody back into the cabin, and he took us into port. While we were out fishing, though, as the waves were getting bigger, it was a little bit of an unnerving thing to be in the six pack and to go down into a valley in between two waves and not be able to see out above the crest of the waves. You're like down in this valley going, "I'm surrounded by water." And it was a very unnerving experience. And, you know, the captain called us into the cabin and said, "Okay, sit down or hold on to something because we are going back into port." And what was unnerving about that wasn't so much that the captain didn't know what he's doing, you know, we trusted him, but everything that we were holding on to was moving as well. You know, so it's like we're trying to get stability and trying to get security in this six-pack boat, and everything that we're grabbing onto is moving at the same time. Now, some of you who've been around here for some time know that I've had significant bouts in my life with anxiety and worry and fear, and it's gripped me at times. And one of the best ways, not the only way, but one of the best ways that I've been able to describe what it's like to be in the midst of anxiety, be in the midst of the worry, is what it was like on that ship, on that boat. There's a storm in my heart, and there's waves that are swelling and cresting, and I'm riding those things, and I'm just trying to give something, grab something secure to hold on to that gives me some kind of stability in my heart so that my fears can rest. The downside is that most of the things that I have in life to grab onto are moving as well, which creates even more fear. And today what we're talking about is a heart desire that we all have, especially we're keenly aware of it in troubling times, and that's the heart desire for security. I mean, think about some of the ways in which we talk about things. We have social security. We have cybersecurity. We have security guards. We have home security. We have financial security. We talk about somebody being insecure or secure. We talk about being secure in a relationship or secure in ourselves. We do have this fascination with security. And that desire, that heart desire, is operational all the time. It's there in the decisions that we make throughout the day. And when we talk about the heart, we're talking about not so much the emotions, but desires that you and I have. And the heart is not so much the thing that we celebrate on Valentine's Day, as the Bible talks about it. The heart is the causal center of the human being. You have a heart. I have a heart. Everybody has a heart. And the reason why we do what we do is because of the desires in our heart. We want what we want. We do what we do because we want what we want. And we want security. We want security, and we try to get it. And so today we're going to investigate our desire for security and how you and I can have security. The psalm that we're going to look at today is a psalm where you and I can have a security that does not move even when everything else is threatening to fall apart or is falling apart around us. We're looking at Psalm 46 today. And Psalm 46 is found on page 471 and 472 in the Bibles in front of you if you want to read on there. There's also, it'll be on the screens above. Open up your app and you can go that route too. There's also a sermon outline today, a sermon outline in the worship folder on the front page. Just 2 points today. Expect trouble. expect trouble. That's the first one. Woohoo! But even more, expect help. That's what we're going to do as we look through this psalm today. Now, a little bit, we don't know the historical context of this psalm, and that's sort of one of the things that helps with the book of Psalms. Many people throughout the generations have found all kinds of hope and help and voice to what's going on in their lives from the psalms, because they're talking about the human experience more than emphasizing what's going on in the moment. There are some psalms that we get a little superscription at the top that says, this is happening, and so therefore I wrote this psalm. But this one is just sort of general. We don't know what the historical context was, but this one has spoken mightily, mightily to people's hearts and given much courage and security in the midst of troubling times. If you know anything about the hymn, Mighty Fortress is Our God, written by Martin Luther, he penned that hymn based on this psalm. So, Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, the very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling, Selah. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice and the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations to the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and the spear and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. This is the only place where God speaks in the psalm. Be still. Know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now, again, for some of us, you might be going through life, all the things that you've found security in, you might be in the midst of losing all those right now. And if that's you this morning, I'm so glad you're here, because this is a psalm that can give security in the midst of everything seemingly falling apart. But also for you and I who, you know, we might have lives going okay. We might have some difficulties here and there. But, you know, we struggle with fear. We struggle with anxiety. We struggle with worry. This is a psalm for us as well. And quite frankly, the reality is, as we'll come to see in a few moments, all of us at some point in time are going to experience some kind of trouble, that the securities that we have in life won't be fit to match. And so this psalm helps prepare our hearts now for what will come eventually at some point in time. This, I don't know if you've paid much attention to your own heart, but the power of worry, the power of anxiety, the power of fear is this little clause. What if? You know what it's like, right? What if this happens? What if there isn't enough money to pay the bills? What if I get cancer? What if I lose my job? What if he or she leaves me? That's where fear and anxiety dwells, and it gets its power in the imagination of what if and worst case scenarios. But this psalm promises something different, that you and I can live a different way. That the what if can be replaced with a therefore though. What if can be replaced with a therefore though. What I mean, verse 2, therefore we will not fear though the worst comes into play. That's what the psalm offers us, a confidence, a security, a hope, even in the midst of the most darkest times. Therefore, though, that's how we can live. How? How do we do that? How does this psalm help us to do that? First, it starts in a bit of an unintuitive place. It starts with the reminder that you and I should expect trouble in life. Verse 1, God is a help, a very present help, but notice a sentence, or not sentence, it's prepositional phrase, in trouble. God is a very present help in trouble. Now, maybe you're thinking right now, Tim, this doesn't help me at all. This actually starts me to start thinking about all the things that I'm worried about, anxiety, because you're telling me that trouble will happen. Yes, I am. I am. But there is this heart-settling reality. There's this wonderful heart-settling reality when you face into reality where you sit there and go, you know what? My worst-case scenarios could happen. And that's okay. There's a heart-settling reality when that takes place. Reminds us that we will have trouble in this life and that the Bible is not living in some kind of fantasy land that, oh yeah, don't expect trouble, don't expect bad things to happen. If you just follow God and if you have enough faith, everything's going to be okay with your life. That's not in the Bible. The Bible's saying, no, there's going to be trouble. Kevin already quoted it at the beginning of the service, right? We just start out the service. Woohoo! In this world, you're going to have trouble. But then the next clause, take courage. I've overcome the world. Now, knowing that we're going to have trouble should start to create wisdom in us. It's wise to develop an emergency fund, as Financial Peace teaches you. Develop an emergency fund. Why? Because expect trouble. Things are going to break in this world. And there are good ways of trying to find security in this life, knowing that we're going to have trouble. A good job, a reliable job, financial resources, good and healthy relationships, strong relationships with people, physical health. But there's a problem with only trying to get security, the heart security that you and I are made for, there's a problem with only trying to get that out of created things. The first is that they can't really satisfy the desire for an ultimate security that you and I are made for. And a desire for security, getting our security met in created things like a good job or financial resources or healthy relationships, can actually create conflict, especially between a husband and wife, or between parents and children, or between an employer and an employee. For example, a husband, say, for example, finds security, his ultimate security in financial resources and a job. He works hard. He's well thought of at work. He works long hours. But what keeps him up at night is thinking, if I lose my job, then I'm just like 3 steps from being homeless. Will he have enough money? So what does he do? He works more and he works harder. What does that mean? He spends less time with his wife. His wife, on the other hand, because of past relationships, because of a physical disability, maybe she... What keeps her up at night? That her husband's going to leave her. He won't find her attractive anymore. And so when he gets home from work from a long day, he's fatigued, he's exhausted. And what does she want in that moment? She wants to find some kind of security in this relationship with him. And so she wants to sit down and talk and just share some time together and reassure her heart that, no, he's not going to leave me. And then he's fatigued. He doesn't want to talk. And what does she do? She gets angry. She's afraid. What if he is? What if he's seeing somebody else? All kinds of things come into our heart. It can create conflict in relationships if we're not aware of how we are trying to get security in our lives. Not only that, because we're trying to find security in created things, we're made to find it in our Creator. These securities won't ever really give us enough. They're constantly moving. They won't give us enough to really hang on to. For example, those of you who have money in the bank, you've got savings. Don't you still at some times just stay up late at night going, will I have enough? Created securities are like holding on to the inside of a boat. They're moving around. They can't fully be trusted. They're good, but they're not meant to be ultimate securities that you and I can rest in. In fact, what's going on in this psalm, how it opens, therefore, God is our refuge, therefore, though the mountains fall into the sea, we still will not fear. Now, in the ancient world, mountains were a way of talking about security. If you built a city on a mountain because that's a good defensive position. Mountains don't move. They don't move. They seem secure, but what we find in this passage is that the things that are ultimately, or the things that seem to be ultimately secure, mountains, are constantly moving. Verse 2, the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea. The catastrophic circumstance of this psalm is that these mountains that are stable are now falling into the sea, and that creates these big waves, these tsunamis, and so there's no place actually that you can go for security. The mountains fall into the waters rise up and they flood into the land, and there's no place to go. You're constantly moving and rocking. There's nothing secure, and this psalm says, yet you can be secure. You can be secure even when the greatest things that you and I are trusting in for security are not reliable or may be failing us, or we may be losing them. So the first, expect trouble. Expect it. And then, even more, expect help. Expect help. Even more, expect help. There's this theme that runs through this psalm. And it's a truth that can actually cause our hearts to rest securely, even if everything else around us is falling apart. Can help us rest securely. It's a promise to be believed over the other promises that our hearts are tempted to believe. In the midst of pain, distress, in the midst of worry and fear, you're speaking promises to your heart. You're alone. You can't, this is not going to go well. This is going to go bad. You're speaking promises to your heart. And what this psalm gives us is a new promise to tell our hearts instead of the fear promises or the alarming promises that we tell ourselves. A new promise is this: God is a real help in the midst of our greatest troubles. He's a real help in the midst of our greatest troubles. Notice verse 1, a very present help in trouble. He's a very present help in trouble. Verse 5, God is in the midst of her. Now it's talking about the city, a city. She shall not be moved. And so the psalmist here is envisioning a city where God is right in the center of it. And there might be wars going on all around, but there is actually joy in the midst of the city. Why? Because God is there. God is there. And he's taking care of the city. And even though there's tumult all around, there's joy there because God is there. And if that God is there and he creates that kind of joy in the midst of tumult, hear these other phrases. Verse 7, the Lord of hosts is with us. Verse 11, repeated, the Lord of hosts is with us. Now, repetition is a really important literary device in the Bible. Repetition tells us, pay attention to this, pay attention to this, pay attention to this, pay attention to this. And the repetition in this psalm is, in the midst of trouble, in the midst of everything falling apart, what the psalmist wants us to know is God is with us. God is with you. He is an ever-present help in time of trouble. He as help can be found even in the greatest of troubles. One of the reasons why this matters so much is that it seems like we have this default mechanism as human beings that if trouble is present, it must mean that God is absent. If trouble is present, that means we say, God, where are you? Where are you? Trouble's here. Where are you? And what the psalm reminds us is, no. Trouble can be coexisting with God. And God can be coexisting with us in the midst of trouble. So this gives us the promise to believe in the midst of trouble. For example, the story of Joseph, if you know that story, the youngest brother, not a wise younger brother, there aren't many, but not a wise younger brother. He boasts about how these dreams that he has and how his family is going to bow down to him and how great he is and all that kind of stuff. His brothers are jealous. They sell him into slavery. But if you read the Joseph story, Genesis, I think it's 37 through 50, read that story in total. You start to see that every time things get worse for Joseph, he's sold into slavery. His brothers sell him into slavery. There's this phrase right afterward, and the Lord was with him. He's falsely accused. thrown into prison, Egyptian prison. Right after that, this sentence, and the Lord was with him. You look at Joseph's life from the outside, oh, that guy's cursed. And the text wants us to know, no. The Lord was with him. The Lord was with him. The Lord was with him. We tend to think ascending in importance, the Lord's really with that guy. Not with Joseph. Go down, and God goes down with him. The Lord was with him. The presence of trouble does not mean the absence of God. And remember something about God as well. In the whole Bible, when it says that God is a present help in trouble, God knows what it's like to be in trouble. Think about that for a while. Now, what I mean by that is that Jesus is God in the flesh. He's become one of us. He was born one of us. He knows what it's like to be on the run with his family, fleeing from murderous Herod. He knows what it's like to be abandoned. He knows what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck. And Jesus is one who has suffered with us, knows what it's like to give us the help that we need in the midst of our troubles. God isn't some aloof God out there who's like, oh, well, I hope they just realize that I can help them in the midst of the trouble. No, he's one that's gone through it with us, and he's experienced the worst of trouble. He knows exactly what it's like to die, and he knows what it's like to give help as we die. He knows what it's like. Hebrews says, we do not have this high priest who's unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but no, he is one who in every respect has been tempted. He's been tested just as we are without sin. He knows. He knows how to give us help in the midst of our troubles uniquely like nobody else does. Because he came one of us and he overcame our troubles. He experienced trouble for us. Corrie Ten Boom has this famous sentence, there is no pit so deep that God's love isn't deeper still. Deeper still. Now, what could this look like? This is just one vignette of what it could look like, one story of what it could look like to have God with you in the midst of trouble. This is Sue and Russ, husband and wife. This is their story, a bit of it. In the year 2000, our world was in upheaval from an unexpected news of cancer. Sue's reflection. The night before I was to hear the results of my biopsy, I was in anguish and despair. Suddenly, an undeniable presence entered the room. An overpowering sense of calm overwhelmed me, and I heard it. It will be all right. I am with you. That chilling moment was a gift that not only lulled me to sleep that night, but gave me the strength to hear that I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. It would sustain me through my ordeals. No sooner had we celebrated the end of chemotherapy when the cancer returned with a vengeance. This necessitated a stem cell transplant and high-dose chemotherapy with a 50-50 chance of survival, followed by radiation. It was clearly evident how little control we had of our lives. Her husband, Russ. We spent 3 weeks together throughout the stem cell procedure as Sue's immunity was reduced to zero. We faced the issue of mortality, had deep talks and quiet contemplation. And during that time, I felt such a closeness to God and my wife as if in a peaceful parallel universe. The most difficult thing was how to handle the what if. What if God were to allow her to die? I needed to truly be able to say, your will and not mine. Therefore, though. She went on to recover, and God spared me that torment. Sue. The treatment eliminated the cancer, but a year later caused pulmonary fibrosis, an incurable progressive scarring of the lungs. Over time, the only option for survival was a double lung transplant. I prayed desperately to be spared the procedure, but the disease outpaced the cure. The support that we received through the church, friends, and neighbors and family was a testimony to God's faithful hand. After 3 failed attempts, the replacement lungs were a match. My first thought was, Lord, you did it. And I was blessed with more time. My thoughts were also, therefore, with the donor who in death became my lifesaver, Russ. The first night at home after the transplant, we felt a mutual sense of awe, tremendous joy, deep reverence towards God. A glimpse of heaven was revealed when, for a brief night, we felt love and intimacy with him deepen to a completely different level. It was an unforgettable experience of shared relief and contentment, utter bliss so intense that neither of us wanted it to end. It was quite literally a mountaintop experience that encourages us to this day. Our joy in the days that followed was immense. But in the fourth month, signs of rejection and chronic lung disease ensued, along with talk of retransplantation. These volatile and unresolved medical issues are a source of deep frustration for us and sadness and place of difficult burdens on our family. Yet somehow God eases the pain, the exhaustion and anger when we cannot bear it anymore, and he encourages us forward. We know that God is holding us up, working on our behalf. We feel it, see it, and we're uplifted by it. We've come to accept that we will not have a life of stability and comfort that we had hoped. We've come to realize that we should not have been striving for stability and comfort, but actually for total dependence on God, from whom we actually can draw strength and security. This requires a daily effort to give up all to him, a real comfort in the promise that in heaven our joy will be made greater as a result of our depth of distress. We may be crippled still, but empowered by our renewed faith, God has helped us to persevere. And that gives us hope and strength to continue to carry on. God can be a real help, a real presence in the midst of our troubles, in the midst of distresses that nothing else can actually fix. That's the promise. God also gives us an activity. He gives us an activity. Come. Behold the works of the Lord. I don't know about you, but when I'm in the midst of anxiety, in the midst of worry, in the midst of fear, my heart is very active. I'm thinking about all kinds of things, all kinds of ways to try to stop bad things and trouble from happening in my life. I have an activity of my heart. And what God wants us to do, instead of looking at the future and looking at future events and trying to figure out all kinds of ways and contingency plans to deal with the worst case scenarios that come into our lives, he wants us to do something else with our hearts. He wants us to consider his works. Consider his works. In other words, he's calling us to remember what he has done in the Bible. What he has done. How he provides out of nowhere. How he provides for a widow out of nowhere. How he provides for his people in worst case scenarios, and relief comes and help comes. Sometimes at the last moment, sometimes at the dawn, it comes. He wants us to read our Bibles to know what he is like. He wants us to tell our stories to one another. Just like one of the reasons why I want to read Sue and Russ's story, not only to my own heart, but to you, is because you and I can have in our imagination, we can think with HD definition of the worst case scenarios that can come into our lives. Our imaginations can be so filled up with all the bad things that can come into our lives. The one thing that we're not training our hearts to do very well is to envision what grace would look like in those moments. What would grace look like in those moments? And what the Bible does, and what telling our stories of how God has worked in us, in our discipleship groups, or in our missional communities, what that does is it starts to train our hearts to start envisioning what could God do in this moment so that we start envisioning grace. But one of the things that's amazing about God is God is so generous and so great and so creative that even our expectations of grace are going to fall short of what he can actually do. But at least starts training our hearts to think and to envision and to imagine, how could God fix this? How could God help me? I've seen him do it here. 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 It starts to train our hearts. Look for God in the stories of others in the midst of their troubles. And remember that one day the Bible ends with all troubles ceasing. All troubles cease one day. He gives us a promise, he gives us an activity, and lastly, God gives us a relationship. He calls us back into relationship. Verse 10, be still and know that I'm God. Be still and know that I'm God. Now, this is not so much about, you know, getting away from the busy schedule of life. You know, that's a wise thing to do. But this is not about getting away from the busy schedule of life and knowing God. Instead, what this is about is know God and be still. In other words, cause the knowledge of God, of your relationship with God, to cause, to let your heart rest in a knowledge of a relationship with God. Let your heart rest. Bring calm into your heart because of a relationship with God. One of the reasons why we have anxiety, one of the reasons why we worry, one of the reasons why we have fears is we let the troubles of life take a God-like role in our lives. They take a God-like role. And what Psalm 46 is reminding us, no, your troubles aren't God. Your troubles aren't bigger than I am. Your troubles aren't bigger than what I'm doing in human history. I will bring all troubles to an end. I will bring all wars to cease. I will bring all distresses to cease. I am God, not your troubles. I am God, not the mountains that are falling apart. I am God, not the seas that swell. I am God. Remember me, know me, and be still, and be still. This psalm is also an example of what we can do in the midst of troubles or in the midst of anxiety, in the midst of worry. This is actually a prayer. What's fascinating about this psalm is that though it's a prayer, not once is there a request made. Notice that? Now, we tend to think about praying as asking God for things, but this is a different kind of praying. This is taking the truths of who God is. This is taking a relationship with God and saying, okay, God, here's the reality that I'm in. What do you do with this? What does this have to do with you? It's taking the truths of God that he is a help in times of trouble and bringing that in. And this shows us one of the ways to calm our hearts, one of the ways to still our hearts in the midst of difficulty and as we look into a scary future. To take the truths of God and pray them. God, even though the mountains give way, even though the seas come up, even though I lose my job, even though I might lose finances, even though I might lose this person, even though I might do this, even though these things might come up, I will not fear. I will not fear because you are a help in every trouble that I will go through. You are fear. Pray that. Pray that. And lastly, be patient with your heart. I don't know if you've been on the water for much, but you know, being on the water for 8 days in a row, for 8 hours, and going through waves, when we got back onto land, you know what it's like, right? It's like, it feels like everything's moving around you, right? It feels like everything's moving around you. But we're back on land. We're stable. We're good. Not a problem at all. Our hearts can be like that. If you know who God is and your relationship with God, things are going to come in. It's going to feel like you're back on the water, but you're not. You're not on the water. You're not in a secure place or insecure place. If you know God, you are in the most secure relationship. Even though it might feel like you're back on the water, you're on solid ground. Your hearts can rest. But be patient. Sometimes it takes our hearts a little while to catch up to that. Would you please stand and join me as we pray? Father, thank you for your goodness, your kindness, your mercy, and your grace. God, would you please remind us that you are God. You're the Alpha, you're the Omega, you're the beginning, you're the end. And God, we're in the middle. We're in the middle, and we're awaiting you putting things right, but in the middle, you meet us here. You are with us. And so, God, as we sing this song, remind us, cause our hearts to be still as we know you, that you are the first, you are the last. There's nothing greater than you. And if you are the greatest in all existence, and you are for us, though the worst may happen, we will not fear. For you, our help in our trouble. In Jesus' name, amen.